Good evening. Welcome to the Monday, May 18th Town Council meeting for the town of Curry Beach. Art, you have a word for us, and we'll have the Art Pascal will do our invocation, and then we'll stand for the pledge.
Some of you know, before I retired and moved to Curry Beach, I was a high school principal for close to 20 years. It seemed like all I did from the time I got to school in the morning until the time I got home that evening was make decisions. All day long, every single day. It was exhausting. There were decisions to be made, and most of the time I was the one that had to make them. In fact, on more than one occasion, I was told that being a high school principal was pretty much like being the mayor of a small town. So Mayor Oliver, keep doing a great job, because you don't have to worry about me wanting your job. I kind of like being retired. One day I was talking with my superintendent and told him that I had a decision that I was wrestling with that required me to choose between the lesser of two evils. Very quickly he responded with, "You know that the lesser of two evils is still evil." Now, evil might be too strong a word, but I can substitute it with the lesser of two bad options is still a bad option. Or the lesser of two wrongs is still wrong. Now, I wasn't looking for an aha moment in the midst of our conversation, but it did change the way I approached my decision making from that point forward. I realized that there are some decisions that need my immediate attention, and that there's some that do not. I realized that a bad decision can have consequences in an organization that can last for years to come. But more than anything, I learned that if I'm constantly having to choose between the lesser of two evils, then maybe I need to look at how I'm approaching the problem. So my prayer for our elected officials, as well as anyone else overwhelmed by the volume of decisions that cross their desk each day, is that where there are dead ends, hopefully resolutions will appear. Where there are incompatible differences, hopefully options will unfold. And where there are conflicts and discord, hopefully grace will abound. Let's bow our heads. Heavenly Father, we give thanks for a beautiful village by the sea, as well as for the tireless workers who have to make the decisions necessary to ensure that it remains that way. My prayer is that all their decisions will arrive with simple solutions, that all of their decisions will be made in a timely manner, and that all their decisions will be made with the approval of all. But knowing what I ask is highly unlikely, my prayer then is for the wisdom, the discernment, and the humility to make the right decision for the right reasons, for the greater good of those impacted. We ask blessings upon those given this challenge and thank them for their unenviable service. Amen.
Amen. Please stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Art, again, thank you for your invocations and your words. And just so y'all know, he was a principal at the high school I attended. He was 30 years. I was there 30 years. So the thought I bring that up. So we're basically the same age. So. But he was there a long time after I left there. So. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the consent agenda. If council had opportunity to look at the consent and make any, do you have any changes or anything?
Make a motion to approve as presented.
Have a motion and a second.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Next is the adoption of the agenda. Anything to add or to that? Or if not, I will entertain a motion.
Make a motion that we have adoption of the agenda.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Public comment. Persons making public comments shall do so from the podium. Provide their name, address, and be limited to 3 minutes. Written email comments will not be read at the meeting and will be included in the meeting minutes. Speakers shall not engage in behavior that disrupts a meeting, including without limitations, obstructing their attendees' views, making noise, or otherwise hindering the process of a meeting. A comment seeking a response may be responded to by the council, addressed during department head reports, or delegated to staff to address. And we have one person tonight, and Andrew, if you would, name and address, please, sir.
My name is Andrew Matthews. My address is 202 6th Avenue South, Curry Beach. I'm, in addition to being a resident of Curry Beach, I'm also the pastor of Curry Beach First Baptist Church, and I just wanted to make public comment of, by way of a word of thank you to the town of Curry Beach and to the town council for their approval of some financial just generosity and for a concert that we're going to have at the pavilion in September, on September the 13th. We've had the opportunity, we as a church got contacted to be able to host the African Children's Choir at our housing facility. And part of the deal that I made with them was that they would do a concert here in Curry Beach. They're an internationally known entity. They travel all over the world with children who are displaced from their families and from their homes, sometimes because of war, sometimes because of famine. And part of how they provide for the thousands of refugees and displaced children in some of these African countries that are affected by this is they have a group of children that tour around the United States as representatives of them in the idea of finding financial support for them. So our church has already made a financial support donation to them in order for them to come to Curry Beach. And part of what I wanted to say to the town council and to the town of Curry Beach about this is I would love to see this not just be an invitation from our church to the African Children's Choir to come to Curry Beach, but that it would be something that our whole town would embrace. And I'd love to see the grass, the whole area down around the pavilion on the night of that concert, just packed with people, just to be able to be part of this great humanitarian cause of helping children in war-torn countries and countries that are affected by poverty. So thank you very much for that. I also want to thank you for the opportunity for us to have what was our first worship at the beach, and I hope we'll be able to do other ones of those. We had it this last Saturday night. We had over 300 in attendance. People came from as far away as Castlehaine and from Hampstead to come to the concert, and we had a great turnout. It was a great time, and I believe that it's the kind of thing, a night of worship and Christian music at the pavilion is something I believe will draw a crowd into Curry Beach. I hope that the restaurants and the businesses were a little busier on Saturday night because of that. Great. So thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
what,
you.
What was the date of the choir?
It's September the 13th.
Okay.
That's a Sunday night.
All right.
I've already made arrangements with the Recreation Department to have the facility booked for that night.
Okay. I just want to get on my calendar.
Oh, good. Oh,
great. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it. Okay. Next item is committee business. Bike ped. Mo.
Honorable Mayor Oliver and Commissioners, the Curry Beach Bike Ped Committee respectfully submits this update regarding recent bicycle safety initiatives and emerging legislative development related to e-bikes. First, May was recognized as Bike Month, which you all know, joining committees nationwide in promoting healthier transportation choices, bicycle safety awareness, and opportunities to experience our committee on two wheels. Bike Month serves as a reminder that creating a safer environment for all users, whether walking, biking, driving, or rolling, requires education, awareness, and continued collaboration. The committee also wishes to provide an update regarding state legislation related to electric bicycles. Current proposed Senate and House bills seek to establish classifications for Class 1, 2, and 3 e-bikes. We appreciate efforts to bring consistency and clarity to this rapidly growing transportation category. However, we have concerns that these proposals are already becoming technologically outdated. We are hopeful that organizations such as WMPO and BikeWalk NC can help advocate for legislative language that better addresses rapidly evolving technology, protects responsible riders, and provides law enforcement with clearer tools to manage vehicles operating outside intended classifications. While traditional Class 1, 2, and 3 e-bikes have become well understood, communities across North Carolina are increasingly facing issues involving higher-speed vehicles, often marketed as e-bikes, but functioning more like e-motos, e-mopeds, or electric motorcycles. These vehicles may exceed traditional speed capabilities, can be modified after purchase, and frequently create confusion for parents, riders, law enforcement, and communities. The committee would like to see future legislation better distinguish legitimate e-bicycles from faster speed electric vehicles and include stricter manufacturer requirements regarding labeling, performance standards, and disclosure. Parents may unknowingly purchase what they believe is a neighborhood or recreational e-bike for their child, only to later discover the vehicle may not be street legal, trail legal, or appropriate for bicycle infrastructure. Our ongoing message continues to be focus on behavior along with the appropriateness of the vehicle. Responsible riders using appropriate equipment should not be grouped together with high-speed vehicles that may require different standards and oversight. As this technology evolves, we believe thoughtful policy, public education, and clear manufacturer accountability can help communities stay ahead of emerging challenges while preserving safe access for responsible riders. Before closing, the committee would like to extend a special thank you to Jimmy and Public Works team for all they do for our community and for their continued support of committee projects. Public Works recently installed the Island Greenway sign at the Spotlight Connector and added a water spigot to help sustain the landscaping improvements in that area. Their assistance helps protect the investment made through the generous Cape Fear Garden Club grant that funded the beautification plantings, as well as the trees gifted to our town through Friends of Curie Beach from the Friends of Carolina Beach Parks and Greenways. Projects like these only succeed through collaboration, and we are truly grateful for their partnership and willingness to help bring these improvements to light. Jimmy and Public Works have become very skilled at smiling politely whenever the Bike Ped Committee says, "We just have one little idea." Thank you for your continued support of bicycle and pedestrian safety initiatives in Curie Beach. Respectfully submitted, Mo. Any questions?
No, thank you, Mo. For everybody's knowledge, Senator Lee has been one of the major ones in the Senate that has put the Senate bill into place. So he is involved in it, and we've sent our support to him, let him know about how much we appreciate what he's done. Community Center Committee, any report tonight? No, nothing. Historic Preservation?
No updates.
No updates, sir. Marketing Committee?
Steve's not here, but we're in the process of finalizing the the budget.
Okay.
With them, and a lot of cool, exciting things coming, changes that they're making.
That next month.
I'll bring it to them. Okay. We'll have it at the next meeting.
Okay, great. Planning and zoning?
No updates.
Shoreline access and beach protection?
No update.
And stormwater committee?
No update at this time.
Oh, Bob's here tonight. Hey, Bob. All right, great. Department head business, administration?
No updates.
Development and compliance?
No updates.
Wow. Finance department, Arlen, you're coming soon, right?
I'll be later.
Yeah. All right. Great. Fire department, chief.
Good evening, Mayor and Commissioners. Just wanted to update everyone. Lifeguard season is underway. We have a full team this year. We're on the second week of training. All the lifeguards have already taken their CPR certification. Like I said, we do have a full crew, thanks to the leadership of J.D. Lanier and our other supervisors. Tomorrow I'll be setting the lifeguard towers out on the beach. I hope to have them completed tomorrow, along with the toy boxes as well. So I've been in contact with Rick Jackson with the SLOP committee, and they've already identified the locations that they want those toy boxes this year. So hope to have that completed by the end of Wednesday. Just ask the citizens to bear with us for a couple of days until we can actually get them set. So.
How many new lifeguards do you have?
We have 37 lifeguards.
How many new ones do you have?
About half.
About half? Wow. That's a little bit more than normal.
We have a good strong squad this year, too. A lot of really good swimmers. So we're excited to
get out there. Good to hear. Good to hear. Thank you, Chief.
Mayor, may I ask?
Yes, sir.
Fingerprinting went smooth.
Mandy, do you have any insight on fingerprinting?
I don't.
Okay.
I'm assuming I did.
Yeah, J.D. Lanier worked with Meredith and the police department to get that. I'm sure if they're missing a few, then we'll probably have it.
Yeah, we did about 11 on the first day of fingerprinting. We're going to do, I think, about 8 more tomorrow. And then the remaining lifeguards, we're going to be able to get them off the beach as they come into work next week.
Kind of like the form and the workout and
everything. We're up ready.
Appreciate your help a lot, too, sir.
And for what we're talking about, we have to fingerprint all our lifeguards. And you want to say a little bit about that, why we have to do that?
Yes, sir. So there was a new bill enacted back in October. Any new employee with the town that interacts with children in any manner has to be fingerprinted. So since our lifeguards, of course, are interacting with the public on a regular basis, moving forward, it's going to be an annual thing for us. And we'll just have all of our guards go through it and implement it into the training process. It's a little bit long-winded. We have to get the police department involved. They have to actually go to a police department that has a fingerprint station set up. And so we're having to go to the Carolina Beach Police Department at this time. But like I said, just what we have to do, so we'll do that.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Brandon, anything?
No, other.
Nothing from police, public works, Jimmy?
I really don't have an update, but I do want to let council know that we did have a very successful asphalt paving project this year. I'd like to thank my Mr. Attorney here, Mr. Jim, for pushing through the contracts. I've been kind of rushing him on, so I appreciate Jim, and I appreciate council for everything they do, but it was a very successful paving project this year, so.
I got a couple of nice compliments from some citizens.
I did as well.
All right. Thank you, guys.
You want to
mention, this is another thing, me and the attorney, and I do apologize, Jim, for, putting you through this, we have a small stormwater project that we're going to do. It's actually tearing out and replacing. It's nothing really major, but we did find a section of pipe stuff that needs to be taken care of. So we'll be starting that this week. Well, the contractors will.
Okay.
And then that'll be it.
Where is that?
That is down at 704 Fort Fisher Boulevard South, right near E Avenue.
Okay.
Right. Any more questions?
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nikki, recreation?
No, I think.
Okay, old business, 9.1, status of Ocean Dunes Protection Action. So, Mr. Hanley?
Yeah, while Bill's coming up, council forwarded to you, or actually Beth did, the signed MOU from October of 2023, or November of 2023, and then the resolution from October of 2023. So we have been partnering as a town with Ocean Dunes to support their efforts. Beach Renourishment stops right in the middle of Ocean Dunes, or a little north of the middle. And then there's an area that has a gap. And so Ocean Dunes formed a committee and they've been working on this. Bill's been great to work with. And so we just want to continue to have it in front of council if something comes up short notice, so that at the end of this, we're going to give the mayor consensus permission to act without a meeting if we need to, in short notice, for signing any commitments non-monetarily that the town may need to support these actions. So with that, I'll turn it over to Bill. Is that a good lead-in, Bill?
So you got half of it.
The part that I needed to get right there. Perfect.
So, Mayor, Town Council, thank you for the time here tonight to update everyone on a project that we started about 3 years ago at this point. We're coming up on 2.5 at least. And I understand that, you know, more than half of council now was not here then. So there are a lot of details that have gone into a good amount of work over the last 3 years. And if anyone has questions or wants to dig into that, just contact me. I'm happy to sit down and bring a couple of folks and we'll tell you what we've done and what the issue is in greater detail than I'm going to go through here tonight with it. I have with me Dave Bianchi, who is secretary of the HOA board here tonight. So, again, if you have questions, we'd love to answer them. So let's try technology here. Let's see. Nothing to... So I wanted to talk just a little, briefly about the situation that we face at Ocean Dunes, and we call it a hole, and there's several dimensions on hole here. The first part is...
I'll just click it for you.
Yeah, click please. The first part is we have about 2,500 feet of beach on the south end. Most of that is in front of the south end of Ocean Dunes and then the buildings adjacent to it that are at risk. The issue is that we have little or no protection there. As David mentioned, the renourishment project stops about halfway down through our property, the major part of it, and then it tapers down a little bit after that. And everything south of there is up to Ocean Dunes to handle. So we're fighting both, as we've learned over the years here, fighting both coastal water erosion and some stormwater erosion. We've had two major stormwater events since 2018 that were pretty costly. So the other part of the hole is a hole in our wallet there. We've had about $5 million of property damage in the last 10 years. Portion of that was covered by insurance, but a great majority of it was not. So that's the homeowners have put up the risk. About 3 years ago, our board, as some of us were coming off and others coming on, decided that, you know, this is a big problem that's got to be solved. We can't continue doing what we have been doing and expect to get a different answer. So we formed this committee to understand the problem, identify a pathway forward. Our goal is quite simple. We want to restore the property to its intended use from years ago and then find a solution that protects it. So we're looking for a solution to restore it and then protect it going forward. So we formed this committee. We started reaching out because we know that we can't solve this problem by ourselves. It takes a village here to do it or a big group of people. Nothing successful has ever happened without it. So we reached out to the town of Curie Beach. Previous mayor was actually part of our committee for a while. New Hanover County, we had Leighton Betzel at that time was the Sandman, was part of our committee. And we started and realized that this is a really long path to solve. It's going to transcend probably 3, 4, or 5 different boards, HOA boards at Ocean Dunes before it's over with. And the first thing that in our first session that we said, we just said, hey, number one, we don't know what we don't know for sure on this thing. Since then, we've engaged several experts. At last count, I think we had 9 coastal engineers and a couple of other civil engineers that have been part of it. The civil authorities from state, local, and federal levels, anybody we can get, manufacturers of materials to solve the problem, anybody that can talk to us and just give us some idea of what we need to do. And we learned pretty quick that, money's going to be involved. We need some money because we have two big engineering problems. One is the coastal side, and then one on the stormwater side. And then we started learning about grants and monies and civil projects and everything that you got to do. So we're in what is known as the conceptual planning and design phase. It's where you find the concepts to solve your problems, but you don't get into final detail because you've got to get regulatory approval for what you need. So we've been far enough to get that, but not any further. So we need about $450,000 at this point to solve, to do the engineering studies, the two that we need to do. The board has taken one of those on the coastal side and approved a very first data gathering piece of $20,000 to get things going. And part of that was a buoy that was placed offshore last week. It's between Davis Road and Red Lewis Drive, about 2,000 feet offshore. Took almost 5 months to get all the permits. So we're learning that whole system as we go here to do it, but it is in place and could be in place for up to a year. It's gathering current data that nobody else has. It's not available through the Corps, not available through the county or UNCW. So it's stuff that our engineer said was necessary in order to be able to make conceptual models. So there are really kind of two steps two paths going at the same time. Number one, we needed money, so we started looking at grants that would be available here. Our focus came, and we actually engaged a company, MS Consultants. It's a large engineering, civil engineering, and waterworks kind of engineering group. They also have a grant team and have a lot of connections in D.C., and they're located, I think, in 10 different states. So, fairly large group, but the chairman of it happens to be an owner at Ocean Dunes and has been since 1982. So our focus was on FEMA and the flood mitigation assistance because we've had several flood losses through the NFIP at Ocean Dunes that are paid by FEMA. So that was one of the priorities that can get you into that grant. There's a model that the MS guys had that for FEMA FMA grants, and we scored very high on it based on our history of losses that we had had there. The issue for us, as we got into it, we learned pretty quickly that FEMA FMA must be sponsored by a municipality. It can't be sponsored by the HOA, as some other grants that we've applied for can be. So we reached out to the town of Curie Beach and said, okay, here's the way it works. The state of North Carolina becomes the applicant for this grant. They're applying for it. The town of Curie Beach would become the sub-applicant. And so that means that the state bundles up a lot of grant requests across the state of North Carolina, puts them into one package, presents it to FEMA for their approval. And we were part of that package. So that brings us down to October or so of 23. And I think you've got a copy of the resolution that, mm-hmm. that the town council passed at that point. And then the next month we did a memorandum of understanding of how our partnership would work together on this, how we would, you know, just from an overall standpoint, how that would work. grant application that was then submitted in December of 2023. And then the federal government took a holiday for 2 years. So during while we're waiting for all of that to go, I mentioned a minute ago about needing a lot of people to help solve this problem. So we went down the path of building advocacy. We want anybody and everybody who might have something to do with this to be part of it and supportive of it. We reached out to Representative Rouser's team here in North Carolina and his team in D.C. and to him. He submitted a letter of support for our grant that went forward. We're very thankful for that. And then recently, Tom Mosier from the MS Consultants Group that's on our team went to D.C. and met with he and Representative Ezel from Mississippi, who are both members of the oversight team for FEMA, to just say, hey, what happened? You know, where are we with all this? And we think that what I'm going to share in a few moments may have been in part due to that. We've also reached out very early to Representative Miller and took him through the problem. He understood it. He got it. He pledged to support us and help fund us. And what we started to learn is that after you apply for a grant, people will want to help you fund your match that you may have to pay. So they're waiting for you to come back and say, I got this grant. Now, what can you do? But he's pledged to help us, as did Senator Lee. Senator Lee was pretty helpful because it turns out that he was one of the attorneys involved in the Riggins case from many, many years ago, and was familiar with the area and actually gave us some thoughts beyond just pledging to work on the appropriation with Representative Miller. And then we've also met with the Corps of Engineers, the regulatory section chief, probably at the time was the most helpful person that we've run upon, in that he gave us some thoughts about how to navigate the approval system as we go. But he also said, hey, it is time for this problem to be solved. That, you know, we've been hoping that there's going to be some solution or some initiative for a long time on it, because they see the problem much the way the engineers told us. They see the problem as an engineering problem. They said there's no way you would do a traditional renourishment in that area, because you've got Kukina rock that when you put the sand down on it and water washes over it, it'll be gone in 3 days. So you got to have a solution that doesn't involve standard renourishment, and that was pretty helpful. He's also they've joined with CAMA to have a guiding kind of committee joint between CAMA and the Corps, where when our preliminary concepts start to come together, we can sit down with the engineers and talk with them about it, and they'll give us some guidance on what we need to do.
Good.
So we looked at that and said that can take 6 months out of the whole process. Not on the paper here, but we've also met with the Army Corps of Engineers, the civil projects side, the people that actually do the work and have the money. They're pretty supportive of what we've done. They've encouraged us to bring the concepts as engineers, get them together on that. There's also a funding opportunity, perhaps through their 51 project as we get closer to it. But we've just got to get a little closer with some conceptual ideas to make that. And then one last one that again is not on here is we met with Commissioner Zappel, the New Hanover County commissioners, who gave us very good guidance and said, hey, you know, bring your grant, bring your contracts back, and we'll see if we can help with funding some of your match as we go on this too. Because all these grants through FEMA have a match with them. Okay? So last slide here. Recent kind of connections with us in the spring of 2025, North Carolina DPS reached out to us with, quote, administrative questions. They asked two questions. Number one, have you done any other studies, engineering studies, in the area? And we said no. And then they asked us, is the money that you put on this correct? And we said no, because inflation and scope that we've learned about everything has raised it up. And they took the first answer and ignored the second. In spring of 2026, another group out of North Carolina DPS called back, this is 2 or 3 months ago now, and asked some questions saying, hey, you know, this is, we're trying to get through all the administrative stuff, you know, check off all the boxes here on this grant, and we just need to confirm that your work that proposed here fits within the planning stage definition for FEMA. So we sent them scopes, more detailed scopes of work that we've developed over the 2 years that we've been waiting on. You know, talked to them about the cost again, and this time they took our update. So where we originally applied and we thought this was going to be about a $325,000 project, after learning more about the scope and inflation and everything, it's actually the $450,000 that I mentioned earlier. So this is what gives us, part of why I reached out to update everybody. The discussion with them led us to understand that this is in the final stage of approval. That we've made the group, and there's work to be done between North Carolina DPS, North Carolina DPS handles all the FEMA interaction there. So there's administrative work for us to do, and we hope to get this whole package handled soon. And we asked them to define soon, and of course we got, you know, no answer on that. But when it happens, and my understanding, and again, you know, we don't know what we don't know sometimes, but my understanding is that when this is finally approved by FEMA and NCDPS, that there will be a grant award letter that says, hey, congratulations, you've been selected, we're awarding this grant, and here is your determination on match requirement, and oh, by the way, you have a period of time to accept this or reject it. We think that is 30 days. Our grant consultant says it could be up to 60 days that we have to do that. But one of the first things we need to do is get with counsel and get Jim, get our attorney together to do all the working details of that the MOU set up. You know, who's going to do what, and how are we going to do this thing? Because there's going to be some things that, you know, the town will be better suited to do than we will be able to do, but then we have a committee with a lot of energy to do some of the heavy lifting on this thing as we go too. So that's kind of why I wanted to give you a heads up, because when that comes, we're going to be busy going back to all these people who said, yeah, we'll help you pay that $115,000 match. We're going to go back to all of them and say, we'd like for you to do half or two-thirds of it. What do you think? And see what we can get done there. But just want to give you a heads up here that we think it's coming. Can't tell you when. You know, could be a week, could be a month, could be 6 months. These things don't seem to move very fast, because the original timeline was 12 months, and we're already three times past that. So that's kind of where it is. And that's what I've got so far here tonight. If there are any questions on what I've gone through so far, I'd be glad to answer.
Council have questions? Go ahead. Yeah.
So just to get clarification, mm-hmm. This $450,000 is just for engineering work?
It's the preliminary design engineering work. There's about roughly $100,000 of it is on the coastal engineering side, and 350 of it's on the stormwater side.
Wow, I would have thought the split would have been the other way.
Well,
so the issue is you don't have to pump water from the ocean, but the stormwater to turn it, that's the problem.
Yeah.
So, and we've talked about this. One, so I appreciate council listening. The key point from this is if they get a short turnaround, our MOU from 2023 says that Beth and council will act quickly, right? So they give us 5 days notice. If FEMA or whoever says you got to turn around 5 days, we need to be able to do that. So that's why I wanted this in front of you guys. The MOU originally Jim wrote, so, and it's pretty detailed on what responsibilities we as the town have on the initial replying to information process, which is good. And then after that, then it says we have to go back and talk about any funding, right? Hopefully they can find funding, not down at Curie Beach.
And there'll be some just logistical details on things like CFR 200 requirements and all that sort of stuff that we're going to need to.
But from an engineering standpoint, their engineer would like the stormwater not to go underneath those buildings out to the ocean. The only way to actually do that is to pump it to the river, and that's where it becomes a lot more expensive, right? So in addition, it's going through land that is Matsu, state of North Carolina, and other places, so that's part of the other issue.
I mean, it's a party of people.
Right, that's why the expense is different.
Yeah, a good bit of the money in that stormwater side is also data gathering, because there just isn't the kind of data that stormwater people need in order to build models. Because I guess there is no official stormwater plan that came to the town when there was annexed down there. No. But there's a lot of pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and nobody wants to own that pipe.
Right.
As we've learned.
Yeah, we don't know if it's DOT approved piping when they built the road or what was when he developed Ocean Dunes, and the county went through, because it wasn't in the Curie Beach town limits at that point.
It wasn't in the town limits then, and what we learned the hard way was that apparently DOT put that pipe in decades ago, and they disavowed any knowledge or ownership of it, you know, almost decades ago. Because when we had the Hurricane Florence blowout, where one of those blew out and it just washed out everything under a building and parking lot and everything else, DOT, said, not my job. And we eventually, everybody scratched their head and said, not ours. And then we went back to DOT and said, okay, we don't need this. We're just going to close it up. And that's when we learned, who did it and what. Because they
right.
It was not a pretty conversation. They were upset about when we said we'll just close it off. So.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yes, sir.
Just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page, the public included. There's two key paragraphs or provisions under the signed MOU. Mm-hmm. I'll just read them to you real quickly.
Which page?
What page?
Page 2 of the MOU, not the resolution.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
I'm looking at 1.06, 2 up from the bottom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If the town is awarded the grant. That's interesting words there. The grant's been applied for, correct?
Yeah, the grant's been applied for, and the town of Curie Beach is a sub-applicant, so
that's right.
We have to be on the
town of Curie
Beach.
Yep.
The town and Ocean Dunes shall further evaluate the feasibility of pursuing the project, mm-hmm. including scope, cost sharing, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The town shall have the sole decision-making authority whether to accept mm-hmm. or decline the grant. And then turning the page at the very top, 1.08. If the parties decide to move forward with the project, it's subject to federal, state law, regulations, yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. The parties shall negotiate a project fiscal responsibility agreement regarding scope, cost sharing, phasing, administrative, managerial control of the project. So
correct.
There's still some upfront work to do out the cooperation.
Agreed.
That's why the heads up for tonight, because we know all that stuff is there, and we've got to do that work. And you know, be naive to believe that that can be done real quick.
Right.
I would wish that it could, but...
Are you all still working with Daniel?
We are not. We are working with Workman, Ellen Workman.
She rings a bell.
Yeah. She is counsel now.
She's seen this, though, so she's aware of the requirements for the MOU?
Sorry?
She's seen the MOU and aware of the requirements with the MOU?
I'm sure she has, Dave.
I don't believe she has.
Well, can you make sure, right? So she's not surprised when our attorney's calling her. I won't speak for counsel, I'll speak for myself. We definitely want to work with Ocean Dunes to support this project. We're not going to tax your fellow citizens to pay for it, but we definitely want to support you guys, right? And so we want to make sure that everybody's on page so that it doesn't slow down, because it seems like they take 3 years and then they need an answer right quickly, and we don't want to miss the window because we're not ready, right?
Yeah.
And that's why Jim wrote the MOU in 2023. Jim, I appreciate your town attorney with the current council at the time, just like we wrote it so that we could react, right? And so, you know, and that's why it comes, all the information requests, Jim, come to Beth and Ocean Dunes at the same time, so parallel, so we see them the same time they do. So we should know if there's a short fuse thing.
Yeah.
And then Beth and I just talked, she'll make sure myself and the mayor are aware. So we should not miss the window because they don't give us enough time. That's the reason why I wanted this to come to council, so you guys are all aware of it.
Yeah.
No surprise.
Right. One other piece that I think that correct me on this one, but the Curie Beach beach management document that was put together last year speaks to this area that we're talking about as a whole in that plan, or you know, it's unprotected area that needs some attention. So there's a lot of reasons to work on this. I mean, we certainly have a lot of financial reasons that we have an interest in it, but we want the whole thing to be fixed and go back to the way the beach looked in the 80s when I first came down.
A couple more questions, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
For what it's worth, media talks a lot about changes of FEMA, reforming FEMA, changing FEMA, discounting FEMA. I don't hear that at all. Does any of that impact on the particular FEMA program that you're involved in?
We don't think so, because the conversation we just had with the DS on it said, no, this is a package of grants that is already under the process and will be done long before that.
Also, I heard a clip about CRC, I believe, considering the possibility of bringing back
jetties and groins.
Pardon stroke.
We were talking about that before tonight. If they just remove the hard restriction on them that the statute has and give the CRC the ability to make a variance on that, it could impact what we do. I mean, the coastal engineer he's talked about dozens of ideas. This is a gentleman that his company has worked all over the world with problems that are very similar to ours. And he said, you know, if they bring that back and allow it, he said that could be part of one idea. But,
if I may, at last week's Ports, Waterway, and Beach Commission meeting, we got an update on that. The bill is SB 1009, and there seemed to be a lot of traction behind it. It's got five mm-hmm. sponsors now, and the idea would be to lift this 50-plus year moratorium on hard structures and allow some tolerance. Regulations would need to still be developed, so it's not Wild Wild West and everybody can kind of do what they want to do. It'll be a very rigid application process, but at least there does seem to be some receptivity to allowing it in special cases. And as the mayor and I learned at a recent conference, county as well, the town of Buxton, which mm-hmm. We've all seen all the notoriety on the news with the houses falling in the ocean and so forth, they had a groin structure out there back in the day that has since been in disrepair. and they actually did get approval to repair one of the groins. So that was a step in that direction already. Sure.
Baldhead Island did the same thing about 2 years ago. They've had some stub groins over there for a long time, and I think they're geo material tubes instead of rock kind of revetments, and they had two or three of theirs replaced a couple years ago. So I think the moratorium has been on not having any new ones, but the ones that were there, you know, could go forth. I mean, the only one that I'm aware of that even close to a hard surface that was built after that bill, original bill was passed, is at the state park. In the early 2000s, they hauled in the huge boulders on flatbeds and built that that wall down there. But that's the only one that I'm aware of right now.
Okay. Any other questions, Council?
I have one question. Under that section 1.08, where it says if we move forward and then we negotiate that project fiscal responsibility agreement, I mean, we're the sub-applicant, even though it refers to cost sharing. Curry Beach doesn't end up being out of pocket any money, do we?
Well, that was the MOU said no, that we would find money somewhere other than Curry Beach.
But I mean, to just facilitate all the costs and keeping track, and there's a lot of administrative work, we wouldn't be doing it?
In our MOU, we said we would do administrative fees, if you look in the MOU.
And do we get reimbursed for this?
No, we would just pay for that.
Just pay for it, okay.
Correct. So that's the part the town said that we would do.
That we would do, okay.
And it's in the MOU. Yeah,
so we'll be leaning really hard on a lot of people for that matching money.
Mm-hmm. And we'll help you.
Any other questions?
Council?
Okay, thanks, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate the work y'all are doing. Next item on the agenda is the consideration and action on high tide landscaping and design for the boardwalk drainage and repair in the amount of $46,735. And Mr. Attorney, you're standing up.
Councilman Dirks.
Yes.
I'm not sure, does everybody have Councilman's recent email?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can, I'd be glad to walk everybody through it, or you can take the lead.
You can walk them through.
Thank you. We'll do the first one first. I got Councilman Dirk's email earlier today, and I simply skimmed it, and then I skimmed the two agreements we're going to look at tonight. I'm not a proud author. Whatever you all want to do, we'll do. But I did want to point out a few things to help guide you in deciding what you want to do. First, starting with the email, the 1A fees, the comment being that there's concern over the fact that estimation of cost is mentioned in that. And I think if we look at, is that the one that's up on the screen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the reference is to, if you turn to page 2 of 3 and look at the bottom terms and conditions, you'll see the number one entry is proposals for estimation purposes only due to unforeseen circumstances, pricing is subject to change. I appreciate the detailed reading. I would point out that the second paragraph there, the prices are valid for 30 days from the day of the proposal. So to me, that kind of locks in to a certain extent those figures. But also, if you, and we don't need to get it up on the screen yet, but if you go to Exhibit A, which is the second landscape agreement listed in on your agenda, you'll see that project scope, let's see, let me find it. If you go down to the bottom, indemnification, subparagraph A, subsection B is what I mean to say. The agreement shall terminate on the date the town has paid the contractor with the contract price of, and those are the two figures added together that were in the high tide part of the document. So you may have enough clarity or enough of a solid provision regarding the contract price that I'll let you all figure that out. The second point, going back to the email, 1.B, second bullet, this would be in the landscape portion of the agreement, should be river rock rather than riprap. Mm-hmm. I think you all can discuss whether that's ambiguous or not. The way I read it is the riprap is the foundation. They're going to be cleaning the foundation that the river rock will be laid in.
He originally proposed riprap, mm-hmm. and we went back and told him we wanted river rock, and I think that was just an omission. We just did not change the wording riprap under boardwalk drainage prep.
My question is, can riprap consist of river rock?
Can it what?
Can riprap consist of river? Can you build a riprap with river rock?
Yeah, but he has in the next section as far as what's being done. He does say install Virginia river rock. So, attorney, it was just a miss.
I think it was just a miss because he's going to put river rock in everywhere. He's not putting riprap.
Yeah, so it just should be grade and prep for drainage and river rock.
Yeah,
and the whole point in there is I don't know how picky.
No, that's fine. No. That was just something. Well, it was riprap to begin with, and we changed, and it just got missed in the.
What we're going to do is walk through the changes that you think should be addressed, mm-hmm. and then we can decide if we need to address them and how we need to address them. For example. Yep. A cross out and insert and a marginal notation on that might be sufficient.
I think it would be totally Jim. Yeah.
And right below that, the next point is he's got Councilman Dirks, where was simple and sample?
The third bullet.
Third. I'm just a little bit crazy sometimes about these contracts and
you need to be.
But I want, if they're going to give us a sample, it says simple. So just make sure we have that spelled
out. I'll let you all decide if we need to address that. I see that I don't know any other, it is a typo, but I don't know any other way.
I think we cross it out and just write in the correct word and let me initial it.
Now, turning back to the email, let's see, we've done riprap and we've done sample. C, minor, the April 29th document, which is the second, you can get the second one up there from there.
Yeah.
And scroll down to the bottom of the first page. You'll see it's labeled as Exhibit A in the right footer.
Yeah, it took me a long time to figure out that was Exhibit A. So normally in every document I've seen, Exhibit A is in the title so we could easily get to it.
Well,
I just want to make sure that
again,
everybody's
we'll
aware.
We'll do it the way council wants to do it, but I've been doing these documents for 40 years.
Okay.
Courtroom and contract, and I've never seen, first of all, I've never had a problem with putting an exhibit in a footer like that, and second of all, I've never seen it in my own work or somebody else's as part of the title.
Yep. That's what my attorneys use, so everybody's different. But I'm fine with that. I just wanted to, I want you guys to recognize that when it references Exhibit A, it took me a while to figure out, okay, I got to look at the footer to find out that that's Exhibit A. So that's fine with me the way you guys have it. I mean, it doesn't hurt the contracting side of this thing, in my opinion. But the other ones are bigger things.
I think you do raise another good point about timeline. Usually, if this was a formal bid type situation, major contract, I do consult with counsel, we get a start time, but in time. We also address whether liquidated damages are appropriate for missing the timeline. On the smaller contracts, particularly if there's a time crunch involved, usually we don't provide that timeline one way or another. It's a good point. Certainly the work needs to be done before turtle season starts, I guess. When does turtle season?
It's already started, but this will not affect turtle.
That's on the boardwalk.
That's right.
Yeah. This will not affect turtle season.
So, again, when you all discuss this, let me know if you think a timeline is important. I think the gentleman is eager to start the work and get paid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't like to assume those kinds of things in a contract.
I don't either.
I would prefer that we at least, it's completely open-ended. There's nothing that says it has to be done within the next 10 years in there. I mean, obviously they would want to have it done sooner so they get paid. I mean, that's the impetus for it. But in my opinion, every contract, we should have a target start date and a target end date.
Yeah, Mayor, at this point, it was planned to be started quickly with the understanding that it would either need to be completed by Memorial Day, or if not, to delay after Memorial Day and get started shortly.
My discussions with the contractor was, if we can get this agreed upon tonight, he should be ready to go to work. So
it's fine with me.
He understands our, and I do agree with both sides of it. I agree with Jim, if it was a larger contract or a bigger type contract, we definitely would have something in there with liquidated okay. damages, but it's too small of a contract.
You want to put something like no later than, I don't have a
Is it part of this budget here?
Oh, yes.
In this budget, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just make sure we get it done by the end.
Yeah, so no later than June 30th. No, I understand that it would not interfere with Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Something like that would make me feel a little better.
Okay.
On the contract side of it.
We'll talk logistics in a minute. The last, so Councilman Dirks, if you look at 3B for a minute, that's when you got your warranty start date. The warranty start date begins with the completion of the installation. If the installation, do we need to address a date certain to finish it by? Because we just gave them to June 30th. You can stop any time in that period.
Well, the wording is difficult here just from the standpoint that hardscape is applicable, but plant material is not.
Well, let's get to A in a minute. I kind of skipped A just for a second and went down to B for the start date. My supplemental terms and conditions have the project being completed upon Jimmy's inspection and acceptance in the MUK. Mm-hmm. I think that ought to work for a completion date.
Yeah. I think so.
The completion date would be the day that he approves it and says it's done, and then we have 1 year after that.
Now, one year for the plant material. Now, let's look at 3A, and Councilman, you kind of stole my fire there.
Well, we have no plant material. It's all hardscape.
Well, no, it's drainage as well.
But that's hard. Is that not considered hardscape?
No, that's the actual, like, French drain.
Yeah, but I thought that would be considered.
Hardscape is more surface material. Right.
I mean, okay, but I was thinking the opposite, that wasn't plant material.
But there's no.
You know, I looked up the definition of hardscape. I think it includes, to me, it would cover the drainage infrastructure that they're talking about here, but I could be wrong.
Let's just make sure we clarify that.
These are pipes.
Right.
That are going through. Yeah, so I don't think that's hardscape.
What language do we want to use?
Drainage
pipes. Warranty on the easy flow French drain system. Looking at his landscape.
We all say hardscape and drainage system. And
operational.
Yeah.
Hopefully get 5 years for both.
Yeah, I mean the point, they obviously seem to be doing a lot more landscaping with plants and trees because 90% of the bullets there are related to
this
that.
Is just generic for his contract.
Exactly, but for us, from a warranty standpoint, we need to know what's going to be warrantied, and that's what I'm pushing for. Is if we say, look, this that 1 year, we go back to them and we say this is not working, and they say it's not under warranty. There's nothing there that would support that.
Yeah, like I said, I would hope that we could get both drainage system and hardscape for 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to use
operations.
And then I'm going to refer to what he calls the easy flow French drain system as well as the solid discharge pipes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, logistically, I think what we'll do is we'll do the changes here, let the mayor initial that, and then send it to him and ask him for his initial.
Okay, that works.
I got a packed schedule tomorrow. It might be Wednesday before you get
this. That's true.
Thank you for reviewing that.
Yeah, we covered everything to your satisfaction?
Yes, sir.
I'm probably going to push it, the field knowledge is probably going to push it to after Memorial Day of starting.
That's okay.
But that's which is fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, so just talking about warranty, right? So a drainage guy, A one-year warranty standard for general contractor work. Specialized drain contractors frequently offer 5 years to cover materials and installation integrity. But you're going to pay a lot more for a specialty contractor. So that's where he got 1 year for. That's what I thought. That's why I looked at it. So just realize if you push for that, the price is going to change, right? And so a drainage system this simple, Jimmy's department would fix it if it had problems. If you push for 5 years, if I was the contractor, I would significantly change the price.
Well, we could ask him.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I'm just saying, just as you ask, realize that's negotiation. And a five-year warranty for a simple French drain is you're going to pay for it. So that's just what I want to make sure council's aware of.
I think a year, if you get a year, but I just want it defined.
Yeah, okay.
I want to get the ball rolling.
That's right.
I'm good.
I'm going to go back. He's already signed the contract. Go back to him and get some changes. And I don't want to add to that by saying one or five. You're going to pay more.
I'm just saying when you ask, just realize that would be the pushback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we can always
count. If I have a consensus, I'll just get a year.
I'm just giving the council information. I think a year's fine.
I think a year's fine.
Yeah, the only caution I have, sometimes with drainage systems, it takes a while, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, with these types of systems, particularly with our sandy soil, it gets in there,
it
gets clogged up. But your thought, though, is that anything that would happen, Jimmy's team can take care of.
I'm pretty sure.
I think a year is SOP, and he's saying
that's right.
That because five it isn't, that we could expect a push on his side to increase the price. So let's just cut to the chase, give him a year, put it in black and white, tie it to the completion date, and.
Okay. Yeah.
And let's just do an inspection when it gets close to the year and make sure we're happy with everything at that point and we don't see any problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that'd be perfect.
Agree.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, council. I know Mark's looked through this closer than and a thank you for Mark for catching those changes.
And if I may, Mayor, just for the benefit of everyone, just to recap what we're talking about here. All we're really doing is, from a boardwalk standpoint, is improving the drainage so that there's not a water damming up along Atlantic Avenue that then creates a moisture problem underneath the boardwalk, which then causes our material to decay faster. So in certain areas where the boardwalk is already high enough, they'll just dig out. That'll allow water to flow underneath in areas where there's not enough clearance. That's what we're talking about putting this drainage system in. All the landscaping comes out because, again, that's what's creating most of the issue, and it gets replaced with very attractive river rock.
At road, at not raised level, they're going to dig it out and it'll be at road level.
Yeah, it's a great plan. It's just I want to make sure that
one thing we need to do so we don't have to worry about it, you can go ahead and entertain a motion authorizing the contract on the condition that the, that I carry through. You might as well go ahead and authorize the mayor to sign
the document. Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the contract along with the changes that we've discussed this evening.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, new business. Arlen? Does it work for Mandy? It won't work for anybody else.
The battery did.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
So I'd just like to go through some basics of the budget process initially. So just to let you know that the budget proposal is in accordance with all the required North Carolina state statutes and the Local Government Budget and Fiscal Control Act. Also required by state statute is a public hearing, which needs to be scheduled before budget adoption, and that is scheduled for Monday, June 8th at 6 p.m. Once council accepts this budget proposal, it will be available for public inspection on the town's website and also copies here at Town Hall. And finally, that a balanced budget or an interim budget must be adopted before July 1st. So the budget proposal actually consists of three components. The main component is the budget message. And you have that in your agenda packet. That identifies the key highlights and significant changes from the current budget year. The next part is the actual draft budget ordinance. And the third part is the draft fee schedule. And all this info, this proposal was put together based on everything gathered from the annual council retreat and then also all the budget work sessions. It also supports the goals and priorities that council established. So I thought just quickly we'll just do an overview of the council goals. And there's more detail which you can find in the budget message in regard to those goals, but just in summary, there's four main goals, which are to work smarter to maintain and improve our quality of life in Curie Beach, ensure the integrity of town financial data and maintain financial stability in all town funds, enable an optimum working environment for staff to produce high levels of service to the town, and provide all departments with the support to maintain a safe working and living environment. Like I said, there's a little more detail for each one of those goals contained in the budget message. So next is an actual summary of the proposed fiscal year 27 budget. This lists the seven funds that make up the town of Curie Beach. In total, the proposed budget is $13,892,362. Which is an increase of a little bit of about $389,000 over the current year budget, and that's about a 2.9% increase. The funds are listed there in order of significance, I guess, or the largest one first, general fund at about $9.9 million, water sewer fund $3.1 million, stormwater fund $611,000. Powell Bill Fund, $181,000. Federal Asset Forfeiture Fund, $25,000. Sewer Expansion Reserve Fund is just about $21,000. And the Beach Protection Fund at $14,500. So what I'd like to do is go fund by fund and kind of give a summary and some of the highlights for each of those funds. So we'll start with the general fund. Some of the key highlights are that overall the general fund is about a little over 9% greater than the current year budget. The proposed property tax rate is 19.5 cents. This is an increase of 2.3 cents per $100 of value. The proposal also includes some increases to some of the fees for services within the general fund, in particular garbage collection. An increase of 35.3%, and also an increase of 4.7% for recycle collection. And all of those fees we'll cover in just a little bit more detail in a minute. The budget also includes a 2.8% cost of living adjustment for full-time employees, which is consistent with the cost of living adjustment that was implemented by Social Security in January, and then also 1.5% merit increase pool. There's also capital expenditures of $485,500, which is primarily infrastructure, vehicles, and equipment. And then finally, the debt service related to this fund is $709,000. So next we can take a look at the general fund revenue. So the pie chart shows all the components of general fund revenue. The seven largest I'll focus on, which are property tax at 44%, sales tax 19%, gross paid parking revenue at 9%, garbage and recycle revenue at 8%, TDA funds at 7%, utility sales taxes 3%, and investment earnings 2%. So those seven components of the of general fund revenue are approximately $9 million, so that's about 91% of the total budget. A couple things in regard to property taxes. They are our largest single source of revenue in the town. The estimate is based on the tax base provided by New Hanover County Tax Department, which is approximately $2.3 billion. And then based on also the 19.5 cent tax rate, which again is an increase of 2.3 cents over the current year. It's also based on a historical collection rate of 99.5%. So they do a great job of tax collection. There's some other, there are one category, it's just called other revenue. It's some of the smaller areas. Some of the most significant things in there are parks and rec activities, about $27,000, ABC revenue, about $26,000, and facility rentals of about $20,000. And then there's some smaller, also some other smaller areas in there. Other financing sources that you see listed there relates to any financing we do for capital expenditures for fiscal year 27. That would include financing for vehicles in police and public works. And then finally, the fund balance appropriation. That's the use of accumulated fund balance for any of our potential capital projects. So next we'll take just a quick look at the property tax increase. So this is an example for a property valued at $750,000. So at the current rate, that would be a tax of $1,290. The proposed increase at 2.3 cents would be an additional $172.50, and this is all per year. That increase on a monthly basis would be about $14.38 a month. So with that proposed rate of 19.5 cents, the total Curie Beach property tax would be $1,462.50.
Just for clarification, this is the town portion. You also have the county portion.
Correct.
And what I saw in the memo just a little while ago was the county adopted a budget without any type of
they do. Yeah. They do.
So. Yeah. So this should be the actual increase.
So next is some of the other fee increases that we talked about. In particular, garbage collection. So the approach we took with this, after we took a look at the total cost to provide the garbage collection service that the town incurs, and we're currently doing it all in-house. And the decision was made that the rate charge should cover that entire cost. So that resulted in this 35.3% fee increase. It was applied across all types of service, residential and commercial, the same percentage. And by doing that, that revenue, total revenue, will cover the cost of providing garbage collection, which we estimated at about $446,000. The increase for recycle is just passing along the fee increase that our service provider has will be implementing effective July 1st. So I thought it might be interesting to see what our garbage rate looks like now, garbage and recycle, in relation to other New Hanover County municipalities. So that's what I have on the next page. And what I did was, for Curie Beach, that is the proposed increase for next year. For the other three entities, that is actually the current rate. So if they increase anything for fiscal year 27, it would be higher than that. So I think the important thing to see here is the fact that even with the increase we're talking about, we would still have the lowest garbage collection and recycle fees in the county. So I thought that kind of helped put this into perspective just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So next, I thought, unless anybody has any questions on that, I thought maybe we just look at some of the comparative information for the general fund revenue. What this chart shows is by, you know, major revenue source, and it shows, in this color scheme, we'll go through the entire presentation when there's these types of comparative information, which green is the proposed budget for fiscal year 27, red is the forecasted amount for this current year, and blue is the actual revenue for fiscal year 2025. So of course, the property tax, we see an increase for fiscal year 27, and with garbage and recycle fees due to what we just talked about. Most other categories are relatively consistent from year to year. In fiscal year 2025 and 2026, we see some higher amounts in other revenue, and that primarily related to reimbursements from FEMA from storm-related damages. And then also the amount in financing and fund balance appropriation fluctuates based on the amount of financing necessary for capital projects. So do we have any questions regarding general fund revenue?
We'll talk about the implications on sales tax with all the other
municipalities. The way sales tax is allocated, of course, the state collects all the sales tax. It's allocated to the counties, and then counties, it's distributed based on one of two methods, either by per capita, so based on population, or what they call the ad valorem method, which is more on the tax levy. So anytime anyone changes their tax rate, and New Hanover County does it based on the ad valorem method. So anytime anyone changes their tax rate within the county, any of the towns or municipalities, it can impact the actual distribution of sales tax. So we already know, you know, so we're increasing ours, so that actually benefits us a little bit in that sales tax allocation. Now, I'm not sure if Wilmington finalized theirs yet, but their proposal is, I think, about 5.5 cent tax increase. So that would swing it a little bit the other way. So it's, and I'm not 100% sure at this point what Carolina Beach and Wrightsville Beach are ending up with. I haven't seen anything recently. So there is some little bit of a gray area in sales tax in regard to the actual, or what the distribution formula is going to end up. But the number that we put here is our best guess at this point in time based on everything that we know.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So any other questions on revenue? We'll take a look at expenses. So this pie chart shows general fund expenses. The seven largest components of this are police at about 2.6 million, public works, but streets and sanitation at 2.2 million, fire at about 1.6 million, debt service 709,000, ocean rescue is about 646,000, administration is about 553,000, and parks and recreation is about 528,000. So those seven functions account for about 8.8 million of the budget, which is about 89% of the budget. Some other important things, I guess, to think about with the general fund is just the number of significant town-provided services that are included in the general fund. So all of public safety, police, fire, ocean rescue, garbage, trash, recycle collection, general maintenance and upkeep of town areas, building inspection and code enforcement, parks and recreation, and general administration and just overall town operations. So all of that is funded out of the general fund. Another thing to remember is just as all of us have had these issues with our homes, is the all the price increases associated with, you know, services, materials, fuel. and they continue to increase. So that's another thing that's impacting our budgets. I had mentioned in the highlights that this budget includes a 2.8% cost of living adjustment and a 1.5% merit increase pool, so that impacts the budgets also. Also, the town participates in the North Carolina State Health Plan. They have mandated a new fee, which is 2.4% of pensionable wages. So that adds about $86,000 to the general fund budget. It also affects the water and sewer and stormwater to a lesser amount, but water and sewer about an impact of about $17,000 and stormwater about $2,300. So the total impact of the town is almost $105,000 because of that new mandate. That is for anyone that's a member, basically, of the state health plan. So, you also see on there a governing body budget, which is a town council budget. And as part of that budget, there's $43,000 that's been allocated to outside organizations that submitted a request for funding. That's $30,000 to the Pleasure Island Chamber of Commerce for the Concert Series and Kite Festival. $5,000 to the Federal Point Historic Preservation Society. $5,000 to the KDP Hunt and Senior Center. $1,800 to the Help Center of Federal Point, and $1,200 to the Island of Lights. And there's also included in the budget, typically we have a contribution that's requested from New Hanover County for the Caroline Beach Inlet dredging. For fiscal year 27, that's about $1,900. So any question on general fund expenses? So the next slide shows some comparative information, again, with the same color coding as what I mentioned in the first slide with comparative information. But the thing here to notice is just that basically the significant fluctuations, in particular in police, fire, and streets and sanitation, relates to capital expenditures in any given year. So, and then also at the far right, there's a other category, and in fiscal year 2025, we had a larger amount in that category due to a transfer from the general fund to the Public Works Building Capital Project Fund. So anyone have any questions on general fund expenses or anything related to the general fund?
Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Good job.
So we'll move on to the water and sewer fund. So this fund is an increase of about 7.9% over the current year. This budget does include a proposed increase in the minimum water and sewer charges of 10% and a 20% increase to the usage-based rate tiers in excess of the minimum. Budget also includes $640,000 for capital expenditures and then debt service of $300, a little over $300,000. So next we can take a look at the water and sewer fund revenue. So this pie chart shows that revenue allocated by a major source. The most significant components are the water and sewer charges. And as I mentioned, there are some proposed changes to the water and sewer rates, and we'll discuss that a little further in just a minute. Tap and connection fees, which are dependent on building activity, and then cutoff fees relate to charges for reconnecting service after disconnection for non-payment. Another significant component is investment earnings on fund balance of about $104,000. Anyone have any questions on that?
No.
If not, we'll take a look at the proposed water and sewer rates. So I'll start with residential accounts. And as I mentioned, there will be a 10% increase, which we see on that first line with the minimum, the 10% to the minimum charge. And the new rates are identified there in red. Then for the usage-based rate tiers, so that's anything over the 2,000-gallon minimum, each tier would see a 20% increase to the rate. And the rates that are listed there are the rates per 100 gallons. So We could say, like, why do we need to raise the rates? There's a lot of reasons. One, water and sewer is what's called an enterprise fund, so it has to be self-sustaining, so it has to pay for itself. So it has to pay for the daily operating costs in addition to capital improvements that need to be done, so we need to have capital reserves for the future. We're in the process. The sewer system is completed. The water system is almost a asset inventory assessment that was fully funded by grants from North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. Part of that is assessing the quality, basically, I guess, in the of our systems and where future improvements need to be made. So as a result of those capital improvement plans, we've identified some projects that need to be done and some that need to be done over the next, you know, basically 10 years. So part of these increases in rates are not only to help cover the daily operating costs, but also to fund these projects as we move forward.
And just a little bit more specific there, the study from a sewer standpoint showed approximately $3 million in needed repair that we're now spreading out over the next few years.
Right, I think the capital improvement plan spreads out over about 10 years. And hopefully we'll have the water system at the June council.
But we have an antiquated sewer system to some degree that should be of no surprise that at some point there's repairs that are needed. And this is the time for us to take that serious and start doing it.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. David, anything
more? No, I agree with that. No, well, it's not antiquated, but it's time, right?
Well,
so the old part of town was put in the 60s and 70s, and so we're at end of life. I mean, 40, 50 years for terracotta pipes is where you are.
Yeah, terracotta pipes, they're mm-hmm. old and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought on the next slide, just give some quick examples of what it would look like for a residential customer in regard to the rate increases. So if a customer uses 2,000 gallons, then it's going to be a 10% increase, because we said a 10% increase to the minimum charge, so about $3.89 a month. The next level is at the usage of 5,000 gallons. That would see an increase of $14.25, or about 15.7%. And the way it's calculated there, it shows the different tiers. That's what I've shown there, the step, how much comes from each tier. The next page has two more examples. And we do have people that use this much water. Monthly usage of 12,000 gallons, that would be an increase of $47.07, or about 18.5%. And then using 18,000 gallons, that would be an increase of $93.70, or about 19.2%. As I said, these increases are necessary to help cover the increasing operating costs, but also to help fund and build reserves for capital projects. So any questions on that? I just wanted to show one other thing, which is another like comparative information with the other water sewer systems within the county. And here also, what I did was I included our proposed rates, which were in the dark blue, and then listed the cost for the same number of gallons for Carolina Beach, Riceboro Beach, and Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. Those rates are the current year, so they don't reflect any increases that they may have. And I think the interesting thing here is that if you look at that 2,000 gallon minimum, even with our rate increase, we're still the lowest in the county. And even if you go to the 5,000 gallon level, we're almost the lowest in the county. Once you start moving beyond that, then you see that we become the most expensive. And that's the approach we've taken, I guess, in regard to water usage and doing something to try that this philosophy and methodology is to encourage water conservation. Well, if anyone has any questions on that. So the next slide shows the rate structure for commercial accounts, and basically it just follows along with the same as residential, a 10% increase to the minimum charges and 20% to the rate tiers. The next slide just shows two examples of a commercial account, one at 20,000 gallons, it would be an increase of $89.55 or 19%. And then using 100,000 gallons would be an increase of $502.36 or 19.8%. Any questions on that? So the last category is out of jurisdiction, or in our case, it's our Fort Fisher customers. So this also follows the same philosophy, 10% increase to the minimum and 20% to the rate tiers. As you say, out of jurisdiction, so our primary customers there are the Air Force Base, the aquarium, the Fort Fisher Recreation Area, and the museum and historic site. So if we look at the next page, that just shows two examples of the rate increases. The first is using 20,000 gallons, so there will be an increase of $115.36, about 18.9%. And then we do have usage that goes up as high as about 250,000 gallons. At that point, it would be an increase of $1,775.70, or about just about 20% increase. Does anybody have any questions on that? We can move on to some comparative information on the water sewer revenue. Again, the green line for both water charges and sewer charges is the increases, as we talked about, the rate increases that we're proposing. Some of the other categories are pretty consistent. The NCDEQ, the grants, are what I spoke about before, that we have those studies funded 100% by grants. That will be gone away since both studies should be complete by the end of this fiscal year. And then also in fiscal year 25, in other revenue, we get higher amounts there due to FEMA reimbursements relating back to the September 2024 storm. So any other questions on water and sewer revenue? So we can move on to expenses. So here, as we'd expect, operations is the largest component at 76%. Administration at 12%, finance at 10%, legal 1%, and governing body 1%. Some of the same things we talked about for the general fund also apply to the water and sewer fund. You know, increases in services, material supply, fuel are driving increase in the budget. Also, the compensation actions that we had spoken about earlier. It also, the increase in the budget also covers some of the capital projects that we had talked about. And then also the debt service is actually coming down a little bit, but still represents about 10% of the total budget. Anybody have any questions on that? Okay. We'll move on to some comparative expense information. Here you'll see most of the functions are relatively consistent from year to year. The biggest difference is within operations, and that really is dependent on the amount of capital expenditures in any given year. Any questions on the water and sewer fund? We'll move on to stormwater. So this budget actually is 55.5% less than the current year. We'll talk about that in a minute, why. There are no changes being proposed to the monthly stormwater fees. There's about $270,000 in the budget for infrastructure and equipment purchases. And debt service in this fund is about $48,000. So if we take a look at the revenue, the majority of the revenue comes from the monthly stormwater fee. It's about 80% of the fund's revenue. And there's a stormwater building fee for new construction, that's about 11%, and then investment earnings are about 1% of the revenue for this fund. this shows comparative information for the stormwater revenue. Again, the major source stormwater fees you see are relatively consistent. The building fees are dependent on building activity from year to year. And for this current fiscal year, you see a significant use of fund balance. That was some planned amounts that we saved up to use for capital project. It primarily went to the improvements on the beachfront stormwater outfalls. So any questions regarding stormwater revenue? Move on to stormwater expenses. Here, operating expenses are about 48% of the budget. Debt service is 8%, and capital improvement, capital outlay is about 44%. And if we move on to the next slide, we see some comparative information. Again, operations, we're looking at increases due to, again, the higher cost for supply services, fuel. Debt service is equal to the prior year, and capital outlay is probably more average this year than the current year, where again, we did some significant improvements in this current fiscal year. So any questions regarding stormwater? Okay, we'll move on to the last slide. But unfortunately, it has four funds on here, so it's the four smaller funds. So first is the ALGO fund. What this is, it's what's considered restricted funds. It can only be used for street repairs, maintenance, paving, anything related to a town-owned street, basically, that this money can be used for. We receive an allocation from NCDOT. It's based on a formula based on population and number of town-owned street mileage, or amount of town-owned street mileage. So our estimate for fiscal year 27 is about $84,000 of allocation. Some interest income on fund investments, and then planning on using some of the accumulated fund balance for some paving projects. The expense side of this fund is paving of about $150,000. And then the remaining amount, $30,750, for more like maintenance type ish things for the streets. Any questions on the ALGO fund? Okay. Federal Asset Forfeiture Fund. This also is restricted money, and it's where the Curie Beach Police Department has assisted in investigations conducted by federal agencies. So based on the outcome of those investigations and the level of resources provided, and sharing some of the assets that are forfeited. So for fiscal year 27, the use of that asset forfeiture funds is will be appropriated from the fund balance if we don't expect to be funding anything. And that amount is $25,000, and the approximate fund balance currently is $44,000. Any questions on asset forfeiture fund? So next is the sewer expansion reserve fund. So this fund is for future expansion, construction, and repairs of the sewer system. The main revenue source is system development fees charged on new construction. And for fiscal year 27. Is budgeted of $20,945. That's $10,795 of system development fees and $10,150 of investment earnings. And this fund currently has a balance of approximately $337,000. Any questions on it? Okay, the final fund is the Beach Protection Fund, and this fund is for any beach-related expenses, beach nourishment, beach access improvement, repairs, dune maintenance, dune plantings, signage, etc. And the revenue source for this is about $14,500 of fund investment earnings. And this fund currently has a balance of about $482,000. So any questions on the Beach Protection Fund? then in conclusion, I just would like to say I believe that this proposed budget for fiscal year 27 is, you know, reflects a thorough review of expenses and conservative and reasonable estimates of revenue. I think it supports the priorities that council's established. It reflects council's commitment to providing exceptional services to residents and visitors. I would also like to thank all the department heads and all the town employees who participated in the difficult task of developing this budget. So if there are any other questions, clarifications, I would like to answer.
Any questions for Arlen?
No questions for me.
Nice job.
Excellent job.
Thank you, Arlen.
Thank you, Arlen.
We do have our public hearing coming up in June, and then adoption of the budget at our June council meeting. So this will be on the website, you said, tomorrow, and go from there. Okay, any other questions? Okay. The next item is a discussion of placing a sign at Joe Eats Park about pickleball equipment. This request, if you see your memo, council, that Commissioner Merkel, Recreation Director Keeley, and I met with Roy Irwin, and I'm sorry I didn't get hit one of his neighbors down the street here from up the street from him about the noise, the complaint of excessive noise coming from pickleball courts. I was reluctant to try to place a ordinance or a rule banning the normal regular pickleballs or paddles and going to a quiet paddle and quiet ball, but we did agree to recommend a sign to be placed, and you see the copy of the sign is in the memo there, requesting people use the quieter paddles and balls. Unfortunately, this is a not just to Curry Beach, it's to other areas that there are more and more consideration. I think recently, if you saw Carolina Beach, approved at one of the, was it Atlantic Towers maybe, a pickleball court in the parking lot, and they're going to evaluate it after a year, and the concern, same type of concerns came up. So I'll open this up for questions or comments. There's the verbiage of the sign that that Ms. Keeley came up with, and we'll place this sign at the park.
Yes, I support the sign. I'm interested why you were concerned about doing something more than that. So one, I don't play pickleball, but I do understand noise, right? And so
I think it came into more of an enforcement. Who's going to enforce it? How's it going to be enforced?
Would be our noise ordinance, right? If you made it, it would be a noise ordinance. If you did it,
I'm assuming.
I'm just interested.
Yeah, right? but we felt like they didn't want to put any of the rules or anything in that would cause more issues with people having who was going to enforce it and how it was going to be enforced.
I mean, all our noise ordinances, and I'll ask the chief, are enforced by someone calling, and then I assume we have a dosimeter so you can measure, right? Maybe you don't. I don't know.
No,
maybe
not.
I mean, that was always my question. What decibel level is considered to be in violation of our noise? I mean, what is
Yeah, there's a noise ordinance in the code, and during that, it's during this activity was allowed during the code.
Yeah. But you'd have to be playing pickleball after 10 p.m.
So we did reduce the hours of the usage of the courts to 10 o'clock, and but this is what we recommended after our meeting with Mr. Irwin, and
well, I think it's a good start. So I support it. Yeah. I just was asking for more interest than.
I have a lot to say on this one.
Speak up.
And I'm a pickleball player. I play all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have talked earlier about this because I spent a lot of time doing some research on this myself that I just want to share with you guys before we decide. I think it's a terribly difficult thing to solve because, but I'm open to the ideas. I also think the town supports active lifestyles and tourism here, and there is a lot of sound that just comes from that. You know, it's the the sound of recreation, it's the sound of tourism. You know, pickleball is part of that. It's part of our what we do here on the beach. I understand that people have issues with it. Some of the research I did was, what comes back is with respect to the soft paddles. I just want to get everybody on the same page with that. The vast majority of pickleball players are already invested in equipment of $200 to $300 for their paddles that they use at a variety of courts. And according to the Pickleball Science Org, these softer foam core paddles do not perform like standard equipment and are not approved by the USAPA for tournament play. So pickleball players are reluctant to use this equipment because it adversely affects their play. Now, you guys probably already know that, but it leads to some other options, I think, that we should consider either now or later. I also talked with the person who runs a company associated with pickleball. She concurred with these findings, but did mention that there is a new pickleball called DigiPro. Have you guys heard that?
Mm-hmm.
That is more durable and is gaining acceptance in the quiet play areas. I think going to the soft paddles will obviously be a deterrent and it'll drive down pickleball play, which I don't think is, it's important to our community. It's an important part of our community. So I agree with that the town should consider options, but I disagree with putting this sign up out. It's going to be virtually ignored. Either mandate soft paddles altogether or not. Otherwise, we aren't addressing the real issue, especially if there's no enforcement. In my opinion, it's a waste of time and money to install a sign. I'd rather focus on better solutions. Putting a sign up there isn't going to solve the problem. It's just going to ask people to please do this, and nobody's going to use soft paddles. And I don't want to spend our money or our time maintaining another sign. Our town's sign ordinance, 804, addresses just about everything but pickleball, and some have varying times. Music, 11 to 10, 11 p.m. to 10 a.m. Building operations, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Noises at night near residents, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. is a quiet time. I think that's probably the most applicable noise ordinance that we have that we could apply to this. Just to give some further research, a library is about 45 decibels, dBs. Pickleball is 60 to 70. People talking is 60. Like, I can hear people in my backyard from the street. It's 60. Basketball is 80. We have a basketball court over there. Children on a playground, 80. These are from some of the research I've done. Vacuum cleaner, 70 to 80. Lawnmower, 85. I'm just trying to give you guys some perspective of what we're talking about here. A rock concert, obviously, where gunshots, 120 to 140 decibels. But I agree, the sounds of pickleball are sharp. They're mid-frequency noise that can be piercing, and the frequency of the noise is really the impact, is that it's just dink-a-dink-a-dink-a-dink. We've seen the emails from it. When the courts are further than 400 feet, it drops the decibel rates down to about 60, which is more manageable, more closely aligned with people talking. And installing sound barriers, this is what I want to get to later, installing sound barriers can actually drop the decibel level even 10 more decibels. So I would like for us to start thinking about a win-win here and take some steps forward. I think we should restrict play into the quiet hours around the noise ordinance that we have. Maybe not even turn the lights on anymore. I mean, maybe just it ends at a certain time. If we want to address reducing noise, let's do that with our noise ordinance. I think we should get a bucket of balls, and we have a big pickleball group over there. Buy a bucket of these digiballs, ask them to use it. Let's get some feedback from them and see how it turns out. They might be fine with using that. Was there like 180 people in the club? They could use these and give us some feedback on whether this is working or whether it's making an impact. I think that would be a good step. I think this is just an impetus to push hard for the new Curry Beach Park, where the courts are going to be moved back. I know it's a long ways off, but we can solve that problem when this is moved. If we move those courts back and we're getting ready to do a design or a full design, maybe we ask as part of the new budget for that, the funding for that. There are a lot of sound resistance walls or things we can do, at least on the north and east side, where we could help keep the sound from going into the neighborhoods. I think that's a possibility. But, and we're at a good point where we could do that.
We already asked for that to be implemented.
Okay, then that's perfect. And then the other part of that is, part of the research that came out was putting hedge around these. You notice down at Chappelle, they've got the pine trees around there. That is a, those are purposeful to help block the noise. We can do some of those things maybe with the new park. Obviously we can't do it with where they are now, but these are things we can take as a town to mitigate the noise and listen to the public, address the noise ordinance. And then I think, you know, down the road we do establish a decibel limit. We say, look, we're gonna, the closest residential property, this is something that somebody proposed in part of the research I did, is they go out and they check the decibel level at the nearest property line, and they say, we're gonna keep it under 60 or 60 or at, and we can just test it. We don't have to go wait on phone calls for people, or we don't have to have people enforcing it, and we don't have rules that are gonna be ignored or suggestions that are gonna be ignored. I think there's a better way to approach this, and if you guys wanna put up the sign, that's fine, but I'm very much against doing that, so.
Okay. Mark, we did look at some of the sound toning stuff, and we felt like they were too heavy that our current fence couldn't handle. But
yeah,
we afraid it would, possibility of wind hitting it, it would, you know, you got to put a fence up so it can hold it. So that didn't work for this situation.
Well, what I was thinking is, I'm obviously not thinking about doing anything to the fences now because my sights are settled like you all on the the long-term goal here. I thought the shorter-term goal would be, you know, let's enforce the quiet, maybe even put it on the books as a quiet time around the pickleball courts or around the, because we'll want to keep those same ideas around when we do build a new KB park.
Okay.
But I think that there's other things we can do to help address the situation.
Okay, so the way I look at this, you've thrown a lot at us, Mark, tonight, and we have two choices. We can adopt our memo and presentation of the memo with the sign, or we could table it with the idea of coming up with a better proposal for us at next month meeting.
Yeah, I think, you know, given that we've not had any discussion on this, I didn't take it upon myself to the level that Mark has to research it. I think he's brought up a lot of good points, and I'd at least like time to research it myself.
So why don't we table this item until next month? Mark, if you could provide your information to all of us so we have something to go back and look at. And we'll try to have a better plan for next month. How's that?
And in the meantime, I'll talk to the group up there, and I'll go get a bucket of balls and have them just test them to see how they like them and see if they make a difference.
Beth, do we need a motion to table?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I have a motion to table this sign request until next month's meeting.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we'll work on another month. All right, item 10.3, 765 Settlers, request for easement encroachment. Yes, sir. Name and address, please, sir.
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Council, thank you for allowing me to come before you. My name is Frank Craddock Hensel, and I live at 765 Settlers Lane. New to Curie Beach, just moved in January, and starting to become real townspeople, so as we find out more and more about the storm that's going to shape. I come before you to discuss a permit application that I had recently submitted to construct a shed in my rear of my house, in my backyard. It was pointed out to me when I submitted the application about the drainage easement of 20 feet from the rear of the property line to into my yard. that presents sort of a problem for us, and aesthetically as well as where to situate the shed. So I'm here to ask your consideration and hopefully your approval on an easement encroachment that would allow me to put the shed in certainly conforming to 10 feet from the property line of the rear and 5 from the side. But it would be within the drainage easement, which is 20 feet from the rear of my property. So I don't know if you have the application or had a chance to look at it, but any questions or concerns?
I have a couple questions. It may go more to our public works director. Jimmy, is there currently a drainage pipe? I mean, is there a drainage system in there? There's catch basins and piping in the ground there already?
Yes, or is sir. There is, and there's also a force main also.
Even at that part, there's a force main?
I think the force main is...
It doesn't go that far down, I don't think, Jimmy.
Yeah, the force main is...
Force main doesn't go down
but
that
yes,
far.
There is a drainage. There is an underground ditch there that's 4 feet down. So we've allowed building over that. If we ever have to have a problem, we'll have to move your shed or you'll have to move your shed. There is a form that the attorney has that you fill out.
The attorney doesn't have it, his wife.
Well, the town clerk has it, but so we have one. Basically, it's an agreement that we work out that if you have to move your shed so we can fix the drainage, we do, because that's what the easement's for. Okay. And we built, there are multiple structures, including decks and stuff back there. So I don't think it's a big issue. The only issue is when you do your hurricane tie down for your shed, do not go deeper than 36 inches. So that's the standard tie down, right, Bethany? Right, so don't go deeper than that, because if you hit the drainage, that might be a problem, right? You'll break the pipe. 30,
yeah, I believe they are 36 inches.
Correct, they are.
So mm-hmm. The contractor that I'm looking at doing the work.
Exactly right.
I'll mention those. And so you're wise to do that.
So what type of foundation are you planning on?
He sets the outline of the wood that holds the joists on solid cement structures so that there's nothing laying on the ground.
Yeah, he's going to do what typically
the joists attached to those, the outline of the of that rests on those cement structures, and therefore, and I asked him, so I didn't want anything on the ground for obvious reasons, and moisture and so forth.
Yeah.
So that's the way he builds his sheds, and it's built on site. Yeah. And getting back there is not easy, so obviously showing up with a completed shed would not be an option. So.
Right. Yeah, and so I encourage council to approve this. The one issue is we need to get the right form from Beth, or I guess not the town attorney, I thought it was him, but that you fill out saying you recognize if we have an issue with that drainage system that you have to move it, or we will move it and charge you.
So is this a swell that's back there?
No, there's an underground pipe.
And so it's all underground, so we don't have
all the way to spot. Yeah, so if you look, it goes above ground ditch, it's spot. But if you go to the spot crossover and look, you'll see the pipe coming out that dumps into that ditch.
Okay. And, okay, so I thought in the past.
Further that, south.
That we had only allowed like decks and stuff, nothing with roof structures over it. Have we allowed anything with a roof structure over it?
I'm pretty sure.
But that's because it has to be detached from the house. So this is already detached.
Okay. I'm just asking a question.
No, that's fair enough.
Okay. The roof lines and the decks had to be structurally.
Because you couldn't move them if they built it into the roof of the house, right? This is a movable shed.
I understand. Right? I just, you know, what we want the citizen to be aware of is all the issues that could possibly come forward.
Sure.
And if we have to move, if it needs to be moved, it's a little bit different since it's just a storm drain instead of this force main. Because it's a force main, we got to even fix it. We're going to move it for. We're going to move it first. Yeah, we'll take care of it. But
the storm drain, we would too, because flood parts of the HOA.
It could be flooded. Yeah,
speed's an issue.
So that we get this formed as an agreement that you understand exactly what both sides understand what's being done.
Mm-hmm.
So
Beth, do you have that? Where is that? I thought that was your turn.
I'll find it.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
It's a standard thing, sir. We can definitely make that.
Okay. So just a question to help me address this with the contractor who's building this, because I did mention it after I spoke with Beth about that situation, and he was wanting to know where I am in the process. The likelihood of getting into there, have we had that happen in the past, or is there...
No. We ever had to go into that ditch line? Not in the last 10 years. Right. I mean...
The last time we had any trouble with that drainage was during Hurricane Florence, mm-hmm. but that's when some of the residents were covering over the
catch. That's exactly
catch.
Right.
They were covering the catch basins. We found coverage over it. That's even how flooding behind some of the houses, so the water couldn't go anywhere. So I don't want anything.
Well, we didn't have to get in the pipe.
But we didn't have to get in. We correct. Right. We did not have to get into the pipe.
Fortunately, we did reline that pipe when finding houses there also.
Okay.
Right. So okay. it's been maintained in the last 5 years probably. So, I mean, it's got 15 or 20 years for sure.
I just want to explore options with him and know.
Well, because of how you're building your shed, mm-hmm. you're building it just like the one in my backyard, it's easy to move those. Mm-hmm. So even when he builds it in place, you can pick that up and roll it out of the way. We do our work and you put it back.
Yeah, that's what he mentioned about the pipes and trying to roll it to
that's
a
right.
location. Yeah. So I'll explore those to give me the flexibility. Should
yeah.
be necessary to have to do
so. You should be fine for a really long time okay. with that particular system.
So
next step is to meet with Bethany then?
I make a motion we approve the request and then Bethany connects you.
Yeah.
So that's my motion.
Okay, so we have a second. Okay, questions. So we're going to approve his request, and Bethany's going to make sure that all the parties sign the agreement.
Correct.
That goes with it. Okay. All right. That agreeable?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much.
Bethany, we'll get an agreement signed, you're good to go. Okay?
Okay.
So next on the agenda is item 10.4. We need to schedule a special meeting to hold department head evaluations on Monday, June 15th at 12 p.m. here at Town Hall. Is that agreeable with everyone?
Yep. That's the Monday.
That's the Monday of meeting. The next of the June Council meeting. We'll meet here at noon. The new commissioners will go into a closed session and conduct a evaluation for the department heads that afternoon.
Make a motion to schedule department head evaluation.
Real question. So what prep is there?
Okay, so typically we ask the Meredith or Mandy to send us the previous years or years evaluation so you can see how the department heads were rated, and then it's up to you to come up to do their evaluation and sit down with them prior to this meeting to discuss a work plan or deficiencies or pats on the back or whatever you want to do, and then we come in, we go through each department head, and then we discuss whether they get the merit increases or not.
So if I'm hearing correctly, each commissioner who has departmental responsibilities takes responsibility for that department head.
Yes, correct.
You write the evaluation.
Yeah, and they can give you the last couple of years
yeah.
so you can go back and look and see what's been done.
Okay. That happens in advance of this meeting?
Yes, it needs to happen in advance of the meeting.
Not only preparation, but meeting with
yes. the employees. Yes, I would
well.
Meet with the department head where they understand what they're walking into when and, we do that.
And the documents will be distributed by Mandy?
Mandy, is it you or Meredith?
One of us will send it.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll get her to send the last couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I've got my copies for the last couple of years. I'm sure Connie's got hers from last year. So.
You know, the last question is, what? Just for timing purposes, how long does that meeting usually last?
We're here all afternoon, pretty much.
From 12 to?
Each department is 30 minutes.
12 to 4, and then at 6 we meet. Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure.
Block spend, off what, about half hour each one?
Yeah, half hour to an hour on each one.
All right.
Okay. All right. Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, great. Okay, mayor updates real quick. DOT updates, our mid-block crossings at E and I and Settlers are waiting on state budget approval of funding. Because our cost, we have exceeded our cost, our budget on that, and we're ready to bid those projects out, but we're waiting to see if we get more, get state funding to pay for it, okay? The intersection at Fort Fisher and K, the crosswalk project, we're in the process of doing the right-of-way acquisition. Just to be honest with you, we have a problem at the corner of K and Fort Fisher with the Big Daddy's property. We asked DOT for some to adjust the lanes, and they said no to that, which we knew they were going to say no to that, but we did ask. So we're waiting back from the right-of-way agents to give us the update on that. We just found that out last week. We're meeting tomorrow with Carolina Beach and the Corps of Engineers to have a follow-up on the beach renourishment project to talk about any issues we may have had, just kind of a follow-up and anything out on the table. So Byron and I will be doing that with them. They're going to actually meet here and talk about future projects and things we'd like to see done. You know, this year we had the period of time where they pulled off the project. We're going to ask them to try to write that in to where they, once they get here, they have to stay. So that just probably means they'll start later, but still have to get it done by April 30th. So, but that is, we have that tomorrow. And we have applied for the first preliminary CAMA grant for the XS 99 beside the lifeguard shack to replace that with to redesign that with a handicap ramp and a better access for the ocean rescue to get on the beach there. And we're making some progress with Matsu on trying to get them, talking about Joe Eads Park and some of our leases. We were supposed to meet tomorrow, but we never got a confirmation back from them. So we're going to try to reschedule that as soon as possible. So that's all I have for my updates. Do have coffee with the mayor coming up the last weekend of the month, this month. So. Commissioner updates. Mark, anything?
Yes. I haven't had talked enough tonight.
The reason I started with you. So.
Now, I want to commend Mayor Pro Tem Hegler. That presentation he gives for the hurricane prep is really amazing. And it is disappointing when you only have 5 or 6 people show up.
Yeah.
And I almost walked out of there saying we should mandate every household do this, because it's very important. He does a great job. He has so much knowledge that he shares with everybody. Please tell people to attend. I mean, I guess it's next year will be the next opportunity.
Next year, or we look online.
Or we need to get, or go look at the video. But it was really, I went last year. I was going to bail on this year. I said, but it was worth going and seeing again. The other thing is Arlen still here? I just want to commend Arlen, man. I'm telling you, this is my first dealing with the budget. You handled it so well, and I loved all the collaboration that we had, so thank you so much for that. That's all,
David.
Good. So I'll work with staff, and we'll get the hurricane presentation upgraded to this year's, which was not huge changes. Also, Mandy got the Hurricane Bertha Fran video that we always show now uploaded to YouTube. So that'll be communicated out this week to everyone, so you can go look at an hour and a half of what happened during Hurricane Fran, including 2 days afterward what the town looked like, which is worth a watch if you've never watched it from the whole time. Please forgive the volunteer firefighter narrators on some of the stuff they say, and I'm sure we don't have approval for the music that's actually been dubbed over it, so don't get us in trouble for that, but it's worth a watch. You can see what the town looked like in 1996, which is amazing to look at now. And then for council, for action in June, I'd like council to consider if we should do a 30th anniversary of Hurricane Fran in September. There's at least a number of staff that did respond to that 30 years ago, so I think it would be a good thing to consider, and let's talk about it at the June meeting.
Okay. Great.
That's
thank
all
you.
I have.
Thank you, David.
Yes, sir.
And Connie?
Sure. Just want to remind everyone, May 25th, the American Legion is going to have their Memorial Day service at 11 a.m., so if you're available, please try to swing by the American Legion for that service. We are going to have the Carolina Beach Music Fest June 6th on a Saturday. They're only doing it one day this spring. They're not going to do it Saturday and Sunday. They decided to do another one in October to split it up. So the Pleasure Island Chamber of Commerce sponsors that. And then we also have on June 14th the second annual skimboard contest. And if you didn't go see it last year, it's fun to watch all those kids on the skimboard. So stop out and see that. That's going to be on a Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, he's going to do 2 days this year, Saturday and Sunday. Okay.
Okay.
That's all.
Darren, anything? All right. We don't have a closed session, so thank you everybody for attending tonight. And our public hearing on the budget is coming up on the 8th. So I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.